I'm Jim Nenzel, and I'm sitting in for the legendary Bill Buckmaster here on the Buckmaster Show. Well, Bill is off on a Caribbean getaway. We're broadcasting from the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio, and in a little while, we'll be talking with reporter and novelist Leo W. Banks. But we begin today with former Congressman Ron Barber, who's coming to us via the Buckmaster Live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Ron Barber has worked many years for the, Arizona Department of Developmental Disabilities, went to work for Gabby Giffords when she was elected to Congress in 2006. He was among those shot at that terrible event we had in Tucson on January 8th, 2011. Nearly lost his life. Eventually ran for that congressional seat and won it. Served for a little more than 2 years. Ended up losing his reelection effort by 162 votes. Very narrow loss. But then he went back to work in that same congressional office after Democrat Ann Kirkpatrick won the seat in 2018. And then eventually did some work for Senator Mark Kelly after he was elected. Ron, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bill. It's great to be with you, and I hope that Bill is enjoying a wonderful vacation. I think it's a special occasion he's celebrating with him and with his wife.
I believe it is, but I think everything's a special occasion for Bill and his wife. Let's talk about a little bit about what you're doing now, Ron, because you stepped out from your work in the Senate office, but you're now working with the Carter Center on election security, integrity, battling misinformation, things of that nature. How did you get involved with that effort?
Well, it happened right after I retired, quotation marks. People never think I'm going to retire, but one of these days I actually will. But I was retiring at the end of 1 year with Senator Kelly. I told him I would give him a year because I was really planning on retiring in 2020, and he said, fine. So when I retired, about 2 weeks later, I got a call from the Carter Center, and they were starting an initiative in Arizona, as you mentioned, to protect our election integrity, to shore up our democratic norms and so forth. And so they asked me if I could find two people, a Republican and a Democrat, to set up an initiative that was going to be a bipartisan or cross-partisan organization. And I ended up doing that. Here and my colleague up in Scottsdale, Don Henninger, is doing a great job in the northern part of our state, in Maricopa County. Last year, we put together a network of over 200 people, about 250 now, who are across the political spectrum, Republicans, conservatives, progressives, Democrats, independents, and a lot of faith leaders. We have one-third, I should say, of our network is made up of faith leaders, and then we have business people as well. So what we did last year was gear up to deal with what we knew was going to happen, and that is we're going to have election deniers, we're going to have threats to election officials, which unfortunately caused 10 election officials across our state to resign under the threat of violence against them and their families. So we worked all of last year, and now we're back preparing for the 2024 election, which we believe is going to be another unfortunate example of how people want to deny accuracy of the polling and the election, the vote counting. And so we have a lot of work to do, and now we're in the process of expanding the network considerably.
And you talk a little bit about, you know, how these concerns first started coming up about election. I mean, it's pretty obvious where the concerns first started coming up. But how did the Carter Center get involved in wading into this particular issue?
Well, you know, Carter Center has done a lot of work on election integrity across the world, I should say. They've gone to Africa and other places, Asia, and been asked to come in and monitor elections there. They have been for many, many years about the business of helping young democracies, stabilizing them, helping them grow, helping them have elections that people trust. And right around 2020, I should say, Carter Organization looked around our country and said, boy, we've got some work to do at home. And so they brought some of the same ideas, certainly the experience they had in other countries, and they established an initiative across four states, Arizona being one of them. The others are Florida, North Carolina, and Georgia, battleground states. And then we're expanding this year to Wisconsin, Michigan, New Mexico, and maybe one other. The whole idea behind it is we're going to go to places where, in particularly where elections are under a lot of stress and election officials are under a lot of stress. And what we want to do is go in with facts that dispute fact-free statements. We want to challenge disinformation, which is making people not trust our elections. We certainly have a lot of things to do, and we're going to be expanding our network so we can do it more vigorously in the lead up to 2024 election.
And I think, you know, we are certainly seeing a lot of misinformation out there about the 2022 election. I think Carrie Lake is back in court today saying that she is the rightful winner of the governor's race. Of course, she lost by about 17,000 votes. And we're seeing the Abe Hamadeh still challenging his narrow loss to Attorney General Chris Mays. And I think even Mark Fincham has a legal fight still going on with the with his loss to the Secretary of State. He could still conceivably continue to appeal that case. And these cases have certainly dragged on. Is this all leading, I think, to a, or do you think this is leading to building mistrust in certain pockets of the electorate?
I think that's basically what it's all about. Former President Trump said even before he ran in 2016 that the election was going to be rigged. He would lose if it was rigged. Of course, he won. And then he continued that emphasis in 2020. And he had, of course, was still dealing with his denial that the election was lost to him. That's at the highest level of marketing mistrust and distrust in our election process. And it's spreading, unfortunately, to a variety of states, particularly, unfortunately, Arizona is ground zero for a lot of this. We had four statewide candidates that were endorsed by President Trump, and they all lost. And as you mentioned, at least two or three of them are challenging their losses. You know, we have established for our network and what we are promoting with candidates are five principles for trusted elections. And number five in that list is about trusted outcomes. We encourage people to make claims of election irregularities in accordance with law and acknowledge the legitimacy of the outcomes after the results have been certified and all contestations have been decided. The courts continue to give these defeated candidates more room to express their views. That's fine. I mean, that's part of the legal process, and we have no problem with that. But when all is said and done, and you have not won your court cases, you know, President Trump lost 60 court cases. He won one in his challenge of the election in 2020. But when all that's decided, we want people to step up and say, yeah, I lost. I mean, that's what happened to me in 2014 against Martha McSally. You know, we had a recount that went on for several weeks. I lost by initially 162 votes, but after the recount, my opponent actually gained four votes, so I lost by 167. And we, you know, we did everything we could to cure ballots and make sure that the vote was accurate. And then all it was all said and done, I lost. And what when you lose, you should say congratulations to the winner. I called Martha McSally after it was determined and wished her well and offered to help in any way I could. That's what we do in this country. Peaceful transition of power to new people who have won the election. And that's what we're all about in this network. We want to make sure that the ongoing challenges and conspiracy theories, at some point they have to come to an end, or at least be ended for the election of that particular person. So, yeah, it's a pervasive problem in our country. The fact that the four of Trump's nominated people lost, I think, is in single Arizonans, at least. Arizona voters aren't accepting the misinformation, the disinformation, and the challenges that have no merit. And we're very proud of Arizona that way. But it's going to start all over again in 2024. It's already starting. And we have to be ready.
And we're going to stop for a break here in a moment. But I want to ask, before we do that, talk just a little bit about how having faith in the outcome elections is important to the entire process.
Well, let me speak to it from the vantage point of an immigrant to this country. I was born and raised in England, in London. My mother was a war widow. She married an American airman when I was in my teens, and he brought us to Arizona. And I loved the desert. I'm a desert rat, even though I grew up in a green country. So for me, as an immigrant and naturalized citizen who took the test of American governmental systems, one that everybody, I think, should take, actually, in this country. But I passed, like so many other naturalized citizens. And because of that whole process and the learning that I needed to have to be naturalized, I have a particular passion about protecting our democratic process. And what's going on right now is eroding trust in democracy. Some people on the far right even say we're not a democracy. We should never have been called a democracy. But we're a democratic republic where the people have a say. When the people's voice has been heard after all of the legal challenges and what have you, that's it. You have to give it up. And we want peaceful transitions. And I'm very strong in my belief that this government we have historically is one of the best in the world. And I want to protect it for the future.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. I want to get back to this in a moment, but I do want to tell our listeners this portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's is located on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Open Tuesday through Sunday for breakfast and lunch. Treat yourself to their mouthwatering pastries, including the famous Danish Kringle, monasdanishbakery.com or buckmastershow.com for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery. And we'll be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
And we're back with the Buckmaster Show. I'm Jim Ninsel, filling in for Bill today. And we're talking with Ron Barber, former congressman in Southern Arizona, who's now working with the Carter Center to help shore up faith in our elections and combat misinformation regarding them. Ron, let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned the problem with election officials leaving their jobs, facing threats. Talk a little bit about what's going on there.
Well, it's horrific, really, when you think about these are public servants. They are either elected or appointed by the appropriate county board of supervisors. They're people who are dedicated, in my experience, to having safe and free and secure elections. And they have been threatened by people who believe that they're complicit in fraudulent elections. Just, there's no evidence to support that, but that's what they do. They have done a lot of things, including showing up outside of people's homes, shouting at them, holding signs. They have done a lot of online threats, not only that, you're going to lose your job, that's the mildest, but also we're going to come after you. We know where you live. We're going to do bad things to you. As a result, 10 officials in those capacities resigned during 2022, rather than go through that again and put their families in jeopardy. So it's really serious. And as a result, security at polling stations, security where they count the ballots has become critical to success. And in 2022, we saw people intimidating folks at ballot drop boxes in camo, carrying long arms. The courts got involved and pushed that away, but it is an example of what people are doing to attack the folks who are really responsible for working our election process and being very successful at it.
We saw down in Cochise County, you had an elections director down there who ran afoul of two members of the Board of Supervisors who wanted to do a full hand recount of the election, and that was not allowed under state law. And she eventually quit that job and went to work for the Arizona Secretary of State, and now those in Cochise County, they've handed over the election administration to the county recorder, David Stevens. Is that a concern for your organization?
Absolutely. And we were doing everything we could to push back on some of the erroneous decisions that were being made, particularly the full hand count, which is not permissible. There's plenty of checks and balances in the system. When we did a public forum down here with help from local newspaper and others, we showed through the information provided by the county recorder, elections director, and the state elections director how complicated the checks and balances system is, to the point where it's almost impossible to be fraudulent in that system. And if you are or attempt to be, you're going to get caught and you're going to get prosecuted. So those people should never have been attacked. But what happened in Cochise County even went further. When the Board of Supervisors decided to hand over the elections director position and office to the county recorder, they destroyed what would be a good checks and balance, where one is an elected official, a county recorder, and the other is appointed. They each look at the election process from different vantage points. That's a good system. Now it's all rolled up into one. And it's a particular concern because the county recorder, in this case, was a firm supporter of hand counts, even though he knew they were illegal. And he hired an election denier to be his election director. So that's where that went. And we're going to continue to monitor that situation because it is not a good way to set up the election process.
And we certainly know that some of these races are very close, as yours was. You're certainly familiar also with the issue of the long counts in Arizona that a lot of folks complain about, and that's a result of those early ballots getting turned in at the last minute and needing to go through the signature verification process.
Yeah. Yeah.
But do you have concerns about how that system currently works?
No, I don't. And, when I first started this work with the Carter Center, I knew the election process from having worked on Gabby's first campaign and, of course, being involved in her office as one of her staff and monitoring how that whole process went then. But then when I became a candidate and we had a very close election, as you mentioned, it went to a recount. And that recount lasted almost till Christmas of 2014. And everything that we could do, we did to try to be successful by curing some ballots that were people who were supporting my candidacy. But we failed in court, unfortunately. And at that point, I said, it's time to give it up, declare that you've lost and go on. So, what's happening in Cochise County is, unfortunately, I think going to encourage more distrust. There was a recall effort against one of the Board of Supervisors members, Tom Crosby. It failed to get enough signatures. That's not surprising because recalls are very, very hard to pull off. So, we have to keep an eye on that. We have other counties like Mojave County where we have similar actors, if you will. And, Maricopa County and Pima County represent about 70% of the state's voters. Their systems are solid. Now, granted, on election day last year, some of the tabulators in Maricopa County weren't working properly, but that was fixed. But it wasn't done deliberately. It wasn't done to contrive the outcome. It was done simply because the right parameters were not put into the machines. So all of that has been examined by an outside person, a former member of the Arizona Supreme Court, and she determined that it was a fair and safe election. And I think that should be the end of it. So, yeah, it's an attack on everything that we, I think, have believed about our system, which is that when you lose, you accept loss. When you run your campaign, run it with civility and respect for your opponent. Don't make stuff up. And those are some of the principles that we're promoting through the Arizona Democracy Resilience Network. And we hope that many candidates in 2023-24 will adopt or endorse or be guided by these principles.
And, obviously there's vocal people out there talking about this stuff, but you've done some polling, and in general, the electorate still has faith in the outcome of the elections.
Absolutely. We have done polling under the auspices of the Carter Center, and it was a poll actually conducted by a company that typically does polling for Republicans. We wanted to do it that way because we thought that they would be more credible in the outcome, what they produce in way of the outcome. And they showed that Americans in Arizona generally trust their election systems. They trust their local election officials. And so the idea that there's a vast swath of people in Arizona, for example, that don't believe our election system is fair and secure and safe, it's just wrong. And so we continue to hope to build on that understanding and push back on misinformation and lies and all the conspiracy theories that we know are around.
You served in Congress about a decade ago now. Not to age us or anything like that, but I'm curious, as you watch this debt limit battle play out, you see what's happening in Washington in general. Are things, and I know things were pretty, the parties were at each other's throats, back then. But do you think it's gotten even worse?
Oh, God, yes. It's unfortunately worse I've ever seen or read about. I was elected and Gabby was elected at the height of the Tea Party movement. And that was a tough time to run. and it may well have contributed to my defeat in 2014. Today, I talked to my colleagues. In fact, just yesterday, I talked to Congressman Jerry Connolly, whose staff were beaten by a guy who came into the office with a baseball bat, wanted to see this congressman, and he took it out on his staff. Threats have escalated. Death threats are at an all-time high. And as a result, we have people in the House of Representatives and in the Senate, but mostly in the House, who really believe that the election of 2020 and 2022 were fraudulent, and now they're in charge by a small margin, mind you, but still they have the majority of the House. Many of the people in the House today denied that the election was won in 2020 by now President Biden, despite the fact they had no evidence to support that. So it's hard to get agreement when you have that kind of extremism and leadership that's extreme, as it is in the House.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank Ron Barber for joining us from the Carter Center. I'm Jim Nintzel. We're going to take a quick break for the news here, and we'll be back with author and reporter Leo W. Banks right after the break. Thank you all so much, and stay tuned.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm your guest host, Jim Nintzel, filling in for Bill while he relaxes on a Caribbean beach, hopefully with a rum and coke in his hand somewhere. Before we get to our next guests, we want to remind you that since 1970, Green Things has been the go-to place for your gardening needs. Green Things is on a lovely 13-acre site that is also home to the Zocalo Village and all those fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things on River Road, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, and on the web at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. My next guest is a longtime Arizona reporter who can now add novelist to his resume. Leo W. Banks has written for the Wall Street Journal, the Boston Globe, Sports Illustrated, Arizona Highways, Tucson Weekly, and many other publications. I was lucky enough to be his editor a few times. A few years back, he published his first novel, Double Wide, a murder mystery about a disgraced former baseball player who gets pulled into the dark world of drug cartels when he sets out to solve the mystery of the murder of an old friend. He followed that book up with a sequel, Champagne Cowboys. His latest book is .45 caliber Perfume, a political thriller set to the backdrop of a U.S. Senate race. Welcome to the Buskmaster Show, Leo.
Hey, Jim. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. Thanks so much for joining us today.
I gotta ask you, Jim. You're like the king of all media. You start out with newspapers, you go to TV, and now you're on radio.
That's I think more clown prince of all media. But let's start with the new book, 45 caliber Perfume. It's a love triangle set in Phoenix against the backdrop of a political race. There's a U.S. Senate candidate and his wife and the campaign aide, and they both end up having affairs with her. And of course, there's lots of money and booze and guns floating around, and trouble ensues. Where did the idea for this one come from?
I walked into my office one day, and these characters popped into my head, and I started writing. Best way to describe it. It was nothing planned.
Uh-huh. And, you know,
it was during the pandemic, Jim.
Oh,
so it had to be a dark story.
Without a doubt.
You're not going to have any Disney characters floating around in this one.
It really is just dripping with pulp noir. And it seems like a real homage to the works of guys like Jim Thompson, James M. Cain, with crooked politicians and femme fatales with dark secrets. And, well, I know you're a fan of these old pulp masters. What do you like about them?
The stories are fast, they're dark, they're funny, they allow you to sort of live vicariously through these characters. There's no writer trying to impress you with flowery language. It's just bang, 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 a story, and they usually run 150 to 200 pages. So, and I've always wanted to do one. You know, I loved, you know, Postman Always Rings Twice and Double Indemnity, Kane's book, Jim Thompson, The Killer Inside Me. Love those titles. Cornell Woolrich. I just reread one of his, I Married a Dead Man.
Those, you know, not only did I love those books, but I love the covers on those books.
Oh, covers are fantastic. Go to Hard Case Crime. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they do just beautiful covers, paintings, usually of some guy standing over a woman with a gun, and she's clothes is ripped and she's begging for her life, sometimes vice versa. But they're a lot of fun. They're an homage to the 50s stories.
Yeah, and we don't see Pulp Fiction the way we used to. I mean, I think Pulp Fiction had such a grip on the American imagination, half a century ago, and I think maybe TV and movies have kind of changed that.
It started with TV, with movies, and then with the novels, which became popular after World War II. I think you had a lot of guys coming back from the war who just had terrible times, saw terrible things, and their view of life sort of veered into the noir territory, and they wrote a lot of these great books and did a lot of these great movies. And it started out primarily as a male form. You know, you had very few female writers doing it. But you've got them now. You've got several now. They're catching up.
You know, Patricia Highsmith, I think, was an early pioneer in that area.
Dorothy B. Hughes in a Lonely Place. Vicki Hendrix. Yeah, there's been quite a few.
And Brash Books published your debut novel, Double Wide, and that was about a retired pitcher, Whip Stark, who found the severed hand of a former catcher in a box on his porch, and he soon finds himself trying to solve the mystery of who killed his friend, and he gets drawn into a whole bunch of trouble with drug cartels, and he also finds himself back on the mound, and of course there's a romance and a lot of twists along the way, and this one picked up some Spur Awards in 2018, Best First Novel, Best Contemporary Western. It was True West Magazine's Western Crime Novel of the Year. And we talked about this before, but it was you'd written part of this book, you know, a long time ago, and you dusted it off and made some changes and sent it out. And Brash picked it up, and it did well enough that you wrote a sequel, Champagne Cowboys. Can you talk a little bit about crafting Whip Stark and this colorful cast of characters in this little town of Double Wide, which is really just a trailer park that he manages west of Tucson?
Yeah, the character really is part me and part not me. You know, everybody always asks, is it you? And the answer is it's always a grouping of characteristics. Way back when I was a reporter for the Star, I traveled around Mexico with the Juarez Indios, a Mexican baseball team. I was always been a baseball fan, and came home and I spent 2 weeks with them. Came home and wrote it up for Sports Illustrated. It became an 8-page feature. And I thought, you know, the characters there were so original, the ball players, and it was such a story-rich environment that I thought I'd try to turn it into a novel, and I did. And it was bad. It was called Tequila Sunday. And then I couldn't sell it anywhere, so I put it aside and kept working. A couple of decades passed, and like you say, I pulled it out of the garage, dusted it off, and rewrote it, and it became Double Wide. And the characters who live out at Double Wide, you might say they're outcasts, they're marginalized. You know, publishers and agents always say they want marginalized characters. Well, here they are. Mostly they're people who show up at Double Wide having, you know, running from the law or having some other problem in their life, and Whip takes them in. I like to tell people that my characters are more likely to leave a room through a window than a door. But they've found a place to be. At Double White, and if the trailer park is called Double White, and if the books are about anything, and I try not to have them be about anything larger than simply the story, they're about everyone's need to belong somewhere.
And will we be seeing Whip Stark again?
He's percolating. Yeah, there's another one in the works, and I'm excited about it. But I don't have a pub date yet.
I'm glad to hear that, because I miss Whip Stark and reading about what it is he's up to.
You know what his real name is, Jim? Do you remember?
Prospero, I believe.
Yeah, Prospero from The Tempest, Shakespeare's last play that he wrote alone.
And his father was a Shakespeare instructor at the college level, if I recall correctly.
Right, very good. Yeah. Yeah. His father was a Shakespeare instructor, named his kid Prospero, and he dies in the... Well, I shouldn't say that, should I?
Yeah, you're spoiling things, but he's a troubled guy as well.
And, oh, he's in jail, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah.
Whip's got to go up to Florence every now and then and visit with him.
Yeah. How did you make this jump into fiction? I mean, we talked a little bit about you dusting this off, but was this something you always wanted to do, even as you were doing the newspaper work?
Yeah. Probably even before that. You know, we grew up in a literate household, went to schools where reading was absolutely required. I don't know if schools still do this, but at the high school I went to, you know, there'd be a reading list for the summer, and then when you go to school the first day, you're quizzed on the books you're supposed to have read. So I was always a reader, and the sure way, the only way really to become a writer is to be a reader. You have to read. And that's, people ask for advice, that's it. Just read everything you can get your hands on. But I always wanted to do it. And when I was traveling around different places around Arizona doing the stories I did for Arizona Highways and others, I always carried a book with me, usually a Raymond Chandler paperback. And at night, if I was in a hotel or something, I'd read the book. I thought, I got to do this someday. I got to do it. And finally, I did it. Actually, the publication of Double White, I probably had four or five books that I wrote that I could not sell anywhere. They weren't bad, but they weren't great. I had another, I don't know if I told you this, Jim, I had another noir type book and the title was Dogs Are Better Than Money. I like that title.
I like that title a lot, and I hope Brash does too down the line. But, you know, we're going to take just a real quick break here, and we'll be right back with Leo Banks talking about his novels.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
And we're back with the Bill Buckmaster Show. I'm Jim Nintzel, guest hosting for Bill, who's enjoying a vacation in the Caribbean. My guest is Leo W. Banks, journalist and author, and we're talking about some of his crime fiction. Leo, your next book, The Flying Z. Oh, I forgot to mention, our friends over in Silver City in Grant County are ready to welcome you back with open arms just 3 hours east of Tucson. There's so much to do in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, where there is plenty of social distancing. And you can also visit the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument for a complete listing of the many things to do and great places to stay. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. Leo, your next book, The Flying Z, it comes out this summer. It's also from the folks at Brash Publishing, Brash Books, and it's about a rancher on the border who's contending with trouble from the cartels. What can you tell us about this one?
He's a young man. He's trying to make a go of it on a southern Arizona ranch while a particular cartel kingpin is using his ranch to smuggle drugs. And one day, a young girl, a recent graduate from Harvard, she's driving west to Stanford to start graduate school at Stanford. Her car, and she takes a little detour, and her car breaks down near the border. And this rancher appears, saves her, and lightning strikes. They fall in love and decide to make a go of it on this troubled ranch. And it's a lot of what happens, the things that I've seen or have been directly told to me, that gets into the nuts and bolts of the smuggling and how it's done, the drug smuggling specifically. It's fast. It's good. I think it's the best thing I've written.
I'm very much looking forward to that as one of my top summer reads. And you mentioned, you know, the cartels are the villains in several of your books. And you mentioned you've done a lot of border reporting, which must be where you're drawing some of your inspiration, obviously. Talk about some of the folks who live along the border and the challenges you've seen them face over the decades you've been writing about them.
Yeah, it's been hard to do it, because over time you get to know them, and the problem generally stays the same, although under Biden it's gotten exponentially worse. But they work all hard all day long, and then get up the next morning and have to redo what they did the day before because some of the people crossing weren't polite enough. And so I've seen some who have left the borderlands because they couldn't take it. The cartel, you know, writing about the cartel, it's almost, you can't avoid writing about the cartels in America today, and especially in Arizona, because they're the villains for a time, aren't they? They're moving fentanyl into the country, getting the precursor chemicals from China, pressing them into pills in Mexico and moving them across the border at in alarming numbers. Amounts. We probably have had 70,000 Americans die every year from fentanyl poisoning. That's from CDC. And the cartels are moving all of it. And it's in Arizona, it's the Sinaloa cartel. You know, we busted El Chapo some time back, and he's in a federal prison in Colorado, but his sons took over Los Chapitos. And the government is now going after them, but it won't matter. They'll put them away, and there'll be somebody else to step up.
It certainly seems like things have come a long way since they were just hauling bales of marijuana across the border.
It used to be almost like a gentleman's game, a cat and mouse game. I was talking to a retired federal agent who's a friend of mine recently, and he was telling a story about getting on a smuggler who was moving north from the border with a bunch of marijuana in the truck. And this guy spotted him and tried to beat him down to the border, but he couldn't. And the smuggler crossed into Mexico, got out of his truck, stood up on the flatbed and all the bales of marijuana, and mooned the federal agent. So that's sort of what it was like. But you know what's interesting? Since marijuana has been legalized in so many places in the country, marijuana seizures have gone way down over the past few years. But just recently, they started to tick up again, because you've got regulation and taxes in this country, and the cartels are figuring out that they can undercut it.
You'd think people would be smuggling it down south at this point.
Yeah.
But it apparently isn't working that way. You know, you got your start in the newspaper business at the Boston Globe loading the delivery trucks with the papers.
Yeah, the high school kid, yeah.
And high school, yeah, and then you decided, you know what, I'd rather be having a byline in those papers instead of lifting them up and putting them in the back of a truck. And that was, you know, the newspaper biz was a lot different when you got started on it, in the 70s. Talk a little bit about, you know, then we were concerned, hey, these newspapers aren't doing the job they used to do, and now, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's bad. Like when I taught journalism at the university, writing, and I would, this was probably the early 90s, and I would tell those kids, get out now, because the trajectory is going to all be down from then till now, from the early 90s till now, and it has been. When I was at the Star, there's lots of the news hole was big. There was lots of opportunity, and there was opportunity for travel, and the LA Times was famous back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s for having reporters that just disappeared for months and months at a time, and no one cared where they were or what they were doing, and then they'd show up with a story. There was that much money floating around. But from the 70s on, I started the Star in 79. From then on, it's been all downhill. Direct mail was a challenge. Cable TV is a challenge. And of course, Craigslist is a challenge. So
and Twitter,
everything,
yeah.
And newspapers are just like a boxer taking one blow after another. And it's too bad too, because they serve a good purpose, a purpose that's really necessary. We need people looking after government officials, because no matter what side of whatever debate you're on, they will try to put one past us if you let them.
Yeah, and I think just having reporters out there might make them think twice about trying to put one over on us. So,
yeah.
You know, without those watchdogs ready to bark, we're in a poorer place, I think.
Yep. And I don't see it getting any better. What's interesting about it is there is plenty of information out there, probably more information available to somebody who wants to find it than there was in the 60s and 70s. But the trick is finding something that you can trust. Finding something that you believe.
Yeah, and also getting that information into the hands of people who, you know, if you have a newspaper thrown in your driveway, you might want to read the comics, but when you pick it up, or the sports page, but you pick it up and you actually read some of the other stories and that sort of thing.
I don't know if I ever told you this, Jim, but I got a friend in Wickenburg, and I was at his house one night, and we were having supper, and on his kitchen counter there was a copy of the Wickenburg Sun and the Arizona Republic. And I said, Joe, you still get newspapers. You must be the only guy. And he has this beautiful chocolate lab. And she's probably 7 or 8 now, but when she was a puppy, first time Joe went outside to get the paper, she stood at the door and watched him. She's a smart dog. Next day, he opens the door to get the paper. The little chocolate lab runs out, gets both papers, and brings them in. And he said, that's why I get the papers. I don't read them. He says, I just can't disappoint the dog.
Ha! That's a great story.
I mean, truly, there's nothing in them, but the dog likes to bring them in for me, so I'll let him do it.
You know, you've written a lot for Arizona Highways, books for Arizona Highways as well, and we've got about 2 minutes left, but what are your favorite spots in Arizona that you've traveled?
Three, if I can remember them. One is the San Rafael Valley. Up above Patagonia. It's on the Mexican border. It's the most beautiful grasslands you'll ever see. And there's a house up there built in 1900 by Colin Cameron, a Scottish guy. And it was the house used in McClintock, the John Wayne movie. It's still standing. The state is really blowing it. They bought it, I don't know, 20 years ago or 15, with the idea of turning it into a state park. They haven't put any money in it. The house is falling apart. That's a story somebody should do. Other place I love is La Posada Hotel in Winslow. It's one of the last great railroad hotels, built in 1930, closed in 57. And it's an architectural marvel. And the guy and the family that bought it have redone it to the point where it's like a museum. You just got to see it. It's hard to think that a hotel could be that interesting, but it is. The third one is up on the Apache Reservation. It's Officer's Row at Fort Apache. It's a series of, I don't know, maybe 8 or 10 buildings set in a row, officers' quarters, et cetera. And they're all unique. They're all architecturally different. The tribe has done a great job of fixing them up, making them look pretty. And I love it. I love walking Officers Row at Fort Apache.
Leo, thank you so much for joining us today and talking about your books. Best of luck with the next one. Can't wait to read it. That is our show for today. My thanks as well to Ron Barber and the team here who keep things running smoothly in Bill's absence, or at least as smoothly as they can with me behind the mic. Join us tomorrow when Ryan Hansen will be in to take the mic. Thanks for listening. Have a great afternoon.